Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Lauren. Welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me again. What an honor.
I am so excited to have with you. So tell us what you've been up to this past year, although it's been an interesting year, so I don't think it's a normal year.
I'm like, well, first things first, a lot of sweatpants, like pretty much everybody. I don't want to say that it was a good year because it was obviously such a weird year. But looking back a little bit, I was like, well, you know, it was kind of, if I'm going to really try to bright side the fact that we went through a global pandemic and like there was job loss and, you know, obviously like health issues, but it was a little bit of a nice chance, I think, for me to slow down. And just cause, you know, like all signings were canceled and some of my deadlines got moved a little bit. And like that whole process is just taking a step back and taking, you know, kind of, I did a lot of like coloring and like watercolor and sort of discovering new things that maybe I wouldn't have. I don't want to say it's been like a walk in the park because it has not been for anyone, I don't think.
I think, you know, 2020 could be the year that we slow down, you know, we stop and took stock of the things that matter. And then the things that don't matter, the extra stuff, the extra stress, the extra, you know, like stuff, you know, that are just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And because we were not able to do it, we can like, you know, after the pandemic, we can say like, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, that's such a great way of putting it. And that's exactly how I feel, where it's sort of like some of the, if you want to call it like crap, was automatically removed from my plate, but I didn't realize that it was, you know, unnecessary or that I wasn't enjoying it until I didn't have to do it anymore. And so it is fun, you know, kind of, finally coming out of this pandemic a little bit, thinking like, okay, we all get to pick and choose, you know, how we want to spend our time and who we want to spend it with. So it's, yeah, good things, I think, even though we had to come through some not so great things.
Yeah. So tell us about watercolor and coloring. Those are fun hobbies to pick up.
They are. Yeah. My mom is super artistic. So she's always been into painting and she's really good at watercolor and she's always trying to like woo my sister and I into that area. And we did not get her artistic genes. I mean, I guess if you can't like writing, but in terms of the visual arts, not so much. So it caught me by surprise when I had like this craving, I think, you know, maybe probably like April, May of last year, right in the thick of things, where I just wanted to like make something pretty or put on classical music with a candle and just sort of like paint or draw or color. So yeah, I started with coloring because it's so easy and I've always kind of liked that. But eventually I'm like, okay, I guess I'm gonna try to watercolor. And I've been teaching myself to draw. And long story short, I went from having like maybe like one pack of markers and a coloring book to I now have two, we call them my art carts, that are like in the bedroom. And we live in Manhattan, so our apartment is tiny and we do not have room for art carts, but I have art carts now. This is my new reality and my husband's.
I love this so much. And, you know, reading To Start With Love, she's a painter. So
she is, you know, I have to think that's where it came from. I've never in my life thought like, oh, I'll have like an like artistic heroine really. And yeah, it was, I'm sure a lot of it was what Gracie I think does in her art is really what I wish I could do in mine. And I'm very far off from that, but it was probably very aspirational on my part. That's such a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, the moment she mentioned watercolor, I was like, oh my gosh, that's what Gracie does.
It's so funny. I honestly had not really made that connection until you just said that. But I'm sure that they're connected.
Maybe it's just like, you know, you probably, did you write To Start With Love during the pandemic?
I did, yeah. So that explains quite a bit. So
maybe it's a subliminal message. You're like, this is what I would like to be, but you know, we're going to make this like hide an emotion, hide an ambition. You know?
It was probably like, I was really frustrated because I was like trying to do like a little sketch that didn't work out. I'm like, well, maybe I'll make a character that can do it better than me and at least pretend that I did it in a little way.
Yeah, I loved it so much. So let's chat about To Start With Love. Like, what's the elevator pitch? And then we'll chat about it because I read the book and I loved it. So.
Oh, thank you. That's always so good to hear. And elevator pitch. So the easier elevator pitch is that it's sort of my take on the movie You've Got Mail, which was actually based on the movie The Shop Around the Corner, which was actually based on this Hungarian play called Perfumery from way back when. So it's a version of that story, which is essentially two people that are very antagonistic in their real life, their business rivals. But what they don't know is that in their sort of offline life, in my case, a dating app, they're actually falling in love over there. So it's this really, really fun combination of Gracie, the heroine, you know, she's falling in love with the guy that she only knows as Sir, and that's the guy in the dating app. And then in real life, she's got this jerk, Sebastian, who's, you know, trying to put her out of business. And of course, we readers know the entire time it's the same person, but the book is really about that whole journey and discovery.
Yes. And it was just like a fun journey and discovery because first of all, the app reminds me of Love is Blind because they don't see pictures. They're like, you know, so it's a very pre-pandemic show that we watch, you know, and it's like we fall in love without seeing a picture. And then there's like, then there's the real life situation where he's like, I'm trying to get, you know, trying to buy out your lease, you know, which is such a New York thing. Like, you know, like we're trying to move away from the small business and get the lease, you know, the lease.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not the store. It's a lease. It's a space that we want, you know.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, it's funny you say that because when I was writing this, and obviously one of my huge concerns, and I love the movie You've Got Mail, but I wanted to make sure that this was, you know, my version and I wasn't stepping in on Nora Ephron's wonderful, wonderful work. And I was like, well, how do I make it? So it's, you know, like I need some sort of business rivalry. And yet it was the second I had the least thought. And I was like, ah, of course, like he wants the space. Cause you're right. That is a New York thing. Like real estate is gold. So that's funny you picked up on that. Cause that was a tricky part of the plot for me. And the second it clicked, I was like, yes.
Yes, I love this. I actually love like how the relationship build, like with the text messaging happening and then the real life, like how they bounce back, but the relationship was progressing as it comes and comes. And then there was a detention, the discord, and it was like, okay, we're going to get together, you know? So how do you plot it out to have that, you know, kind of like two storylines, you know, happening at once that are making sense?
You know, it was actually, I will say it was very difficult. And I've had the story in my mind, I think for a while, probably just because I love You've Got Mail so much. And the whole premise, just the idea of two people falling in love and not knowing that they already know each other in a different capacity, that has just wonderful tension already built into it. So that's exciting. But in terms of planning, I think I knew from the beginning, like, oof, this is going to be a doozy. And the hardest part really was sort of the pacing of it, because you want to be rooting for Gracie and Sebastian, right? As that, because that's sort of that's the in-person romance. So we're seeing them actually on the page together. You want to root for them, but at the same time, you don't want Gracie to betray Sir, you know, because it's the same person, because you want her to like basically be kind of equally in love with both of them. But then in romance, that's sort of a no-no, right? Like you've got to have feelings for one person. Mm-hmm. So balancing that was a challenge. And I think my editor helped a ton with that. Probably the first draft, that was my biggest concern when I turned it in. And it was just, you know, it was playing with little tiny pieces of it. And I think it's those text message conversations that are in between the chapters that really sort of helped, because they didn't all have to be these really like deep emotional exchanges. Some of them were, you know, they would talk about like her cat or favorite flavors of ice cream or whatever it may be. And I think kind of the fun part there is you, by the end of the story, because you have all those little tiny exchanges that seem insignificant, when they're put together, you get the sense, okay, these people know each other. Like they've connected on the big level and they've connected on the little level. Which really, I kind of hijacked your question. How did I plan it? I don't know. It took just like a lot of trial and error. But yeah, it was basically just writing and then like, oh, that doesn't work. And oh, that didn't work. And oh, we're moving too fast or we're not moving quick enough. So a lot of practice, basically.
I love this. And so this book is a return. It reminded me of The Prenup because it's super, super slow burn. Like so slow burn, but it pays off in the end.
And I so, do love my slow burn.
Like, I don't know, I absolutely adore it. Like, it was just like, I love the prenup, which we can talk about this because I love that book so much. But To Serve with Love is like, it just reminded me of the beat setup of the prenup. And I was like, it works. Like, I'm fine with just kissing. Like, I'm fine with like not having to go through it because the slow burn pays off in the end, you know?
And you know, it is, and I know in the taking out the steamy scenes is always such a tricky topic because that's how I got my start. And some readers, you know, they really love that. And I'm definitely, I would never say that I'm never going to write those again because those are fun in their own way. But there really is, you know, to your point about the prenup and then this one as well, there's something so kind of like delicious about keeping them apart for so long. And the payoff is so good. So yeah, I really, you know, it's been a newer direction for me, but it's one that I definitely want to keep exploring because they're much harder to write, but in a lot of ways, I think they're more rewarding as well.
Yeah, I find the payoff, like, it works for me. I didn't realize I like slow burn until I think I read a few books and I was like, oh my gosh, this works. And it's like, and it's something that it takes a while for the author to craft the story, to keep the tension going, to keep you guessing and keep you feeling the feelings, and then you know it's going to pay off in the end. And so you're doing a great job, and I will keep reading your slow burns because they're like they're great, delicious tension, and they remind me of like rom-com movies, which is like what I love, and that's like my first love is, you know, the Nora Ephron's, like Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah, yep. You
know? Like, whereas like there's no intimate scenes, it's just like a kiss at the end and you're like, oh my gosh, it's so good.
Yeah, it's that kiss at the end, and I think the moment for me where I realized like, oh no, that is gold. And it's I don't even know if it's like a traditional rom-com, but the movie The Cutting Edge. I can't remember if we talked about this in last year or not. Yeah. That movie and that kiss at the end and that tension, that's what, you know, it inspired the prenup a little bit. And then this one as well is sort of using that as the model of tension, basically.
Yes, I like this. I like this new route that you're going for. So just keep going.
Thank you. I'm glad I have at least like one person. Like I said, it's a big departure. So I'm like, I hope someone comes with me on this new journey.
Yeah, I think so. But I think you're going to find a new audience. Like that's the beauty of it, because there's a large audience of romance readers or non-romance readers who are looking for rom-coms, who are looking for like a reminder of like what the rom-coms are like we watch in the 80s and 90s. You know, and so I think there's a market there, you know, and there's like a sense of like, you know, like people like slow burn, like they like the tension, they like the stuff, and it doesn't have to always have an intimacy. Like, you know, I think it's like, it's fine.
I hope so. And one thing, and I do like that, I don't want to say that I regret not writing the sexy ones, but there is always just like that nervousness or fear of disappointing people. But I always try to remind myself, and I try to remind my readers as well. And like, if you want the sexy books, there are so many writers out there that are still writing those, and they're doing such a good job at it. And especially like, I think, you know, usually in the Amazon top 100, 200 in romance, like most of those are very steamy. So there's so many out there. And if I could even like help with this other, maybe slightly less represented area of the more chaste rom-coms, if you will. That's sort of a fun area to contribute to.
Yeah, I like this exploration of it. It's like, it's someone who skips the sex scenes. I'm like, this is great.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, like, it's fine. Like, I am fine with them. Like, I think for me, what happens is, it only bothers me if the author teases you there's going to be a sex scene and then shuts the door. That feels really sudden. But if the author is just like, you know, we're just going to kiss and, you know, next night happened and it's fine, there's no shutting the door, I feel like it's not as like shocking to the system. And then you kind of like get the story going. So it's fine just to have a kiss at the end, you know, as long as we have the tension of the relationship building and explaining like, this is what's going to happen. It's totally fine.
I'm glad to hear you say that for sure.
What are you working next?
I am, well, another slow burn, so you'll be pleased. So it's called Made in Manhattan, and it will be out, we actually don't have an official release date yet, but it will probably be out in January of next year. And that one is a very fun, I've already done a Pygmalion story with Isn't She Lovely from way back when, which is basically sort of, you know, the idea of what's one with Audrey Hepburn, My Fair Lady, and you know, she's all that. And essentially it's the idea of one person making over the other person for some reason. So I reverse this one. It's usually the hero that's making over the heroine. I actually have this story where I've got a very kind of like upscale borderline prissy heroine. And as a favor to her grandmother's friend, she has this very like rough around the edges guy. He's from Louisiana. He does not like New York. He doesn't really fit into New York. But in order to take over the company, you know, he has to sort of be like made over in this model and figure out how to get around the boardroom and the New York social scene. So it's a lot of, you know, like shopping scenes and like her going to like parties with him and them kind of like bickering back and forth. And then the fun thing about that one is I thought it was going to be very much that Pygmalion story. Mm-hmm. And then what happened is he actually, the hero's name is Kane. Kane actually, I think, ended up teaching Violet more than she taught him, just in terms of life and like letting go a little bit. So that was one of those fun stories where I had this very, I thought very like clear plan and I was so excited about it. And then I started writing it and it was even, I think it was better and more nuanced than I even planned on, which is always nice when that happens. It doesn't always. So that was sort of a fun story that wrote itself in a different direction than I thought, but I'm very excited about that one.
Oh my gosh. I love when a hero gets a makeover. Like, it's just like so fun.
And I do too.
Many of those where I'm like, I'm all for it. I'm like, give him a makeover. Let's do a makeover scene.
Yes, especially because then you almost get sort of like two sides, like whichever type of hero you like, whether it's like the bad boy or like, you know, the more like buttoned up, you kind of get a little bit of both and you get mm-hmm. the heroine's, you know, reaction to like, oh, yeah, he looks different. And just mm-hmm. those moments are very fun.
Yes, I love this. So what do you love about writing about New York? Because your stories are New York based. Like they're reflective. You live in the city, but your love for New York is like so it's like patented there. Like it's just like it's just there. Like it's like New York, you know.
I know. Yeah, I do. I feel like I'm a broken record with this, but I always joke that it feels like a character. And I never mean like, oh, how are we gonna fit New York into this book? It's just such a vibrant city and it's obviously a huge city and it just, if you're trying to set something here, there's so many nuances about like, we don't usually have, like nobody has cars and like nobody drives. So there's like the cab and the, you know, the subway and all those kind of dynamics, as well as just the sheer amount of people, which means you can sort of have a lot of built-in conflict there. But I think it's the energy. I know that's a little bit of a cliche response, like a big city has energy, but there's just something about it that sort of, yeah, it feels very alive, even just taking the dog out at 11:30 last night because she decided that's when she needed to do her business. But it's like even 11:30, like there were people out and, you know, there were like cops chatting on the sidewalk and, you know, like two cars, like people, windows roll down, you know, people, well, they were kind of fighting, but still, it's just, there's always something happening. And I think that's just sort of an attractive quality that makes its way onto the page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love New York. I miss New York. I love reading your books. And there's a couple authors who get New York right. And I think it's because it's like there's an energy about living New York, about living the people, the community, the amount of stuff to do, you know, how to get there, like, you know, even just like the sheer, like, okay, you're at a cross town, like you go to the park or you're in Central Park or you're in this place. And it's like, it's just, there's energy that I don't think you can compare any other place. Like, I think New York is like its own beast, you know?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And it is. I mean, I can't imagine. Well, I moved here right as I was beginning my writing career, but I don't know that I would ever even try to take on setting a story in New York, not having been here. Cause it is just sort of like a tricky city, but you know, it is little things like you said, like getting across town or like the fact that like Central Park is literally like this big park between the east side and the west side and you can't really drive through it very easily. It's knowing all those little tiny things and then the things that can happen, getting them across the park that you don't really know until you've done it.
Yeah, or avoiding Times Square.
Exactly. Oh, yes. Yes.
Like little things like avoiding Times Square because New Yorkers won't go to Times Square unless they're going to a Broadway show. And that it may just stay away from Times Square, the proper Times Square. They might just go to the side streets, you know?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. We live right by Times Square. And we always joke we will walk you know, 10 blocks uptown or downtown, it doesn't matter, just to get around Times Square. Even if it means that we walk further, you're actually going to get there faster because you don't have to go through the, you know how it is. Like, it's basically a mob.
It is.
if you can walk around it, that's a good thing.
You can walk around it. You can go 9th Avenue. Like, 9th Avenue is good. 8th Avenue is a little weird. Like, it's so, like, too much touristy is left over. You know, like, there's certain streets. It's like, okay, there's a lot of tourists here, so you just avoid them. I don't.
Yep. Exactly.
So, and yeah, and I think that's the energy of living in New York. Like, you know, like, you're living there for long term. You know, you're not going to be like, it's not just like a one time, I'm going to cram every experience possible in a weekend, you know. So I think your characters reflect that idea of like, you know, I live in the city, I'm part of it, and that allows me to experience New York City as a New Yorker, not just as an outsider.
Right. Yes. Yeah, it's not all about the Empire State Building and Statue of Liberty. It's sort of the, like, where am I going to buy my toilet paper and pick up my prescription and the little realities of life.
Yeah. The joint reads and the bodegas.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and even using the word bodega, I was like, you know, most of my editors live here as well. And the copy editor and the proofreaders oftentimes. And we're like, do we use the word bodega? Because that's what the character would use. But if you don't live here, like, maybe I didn't know when I moved here that it's basically like a kind of a little tiny grocery store.
I know. I just read a book, the Morgan Matson new book. It's set in New York and it's like the cat bodega. It was like basically a New York trip for overnight. And it was like so nice to feel like I'm just like listening. I'm just another New York character as the main character of a story, you know, as someone who's no longer living in New York, I like, I miss it. So any books that have that, I'm like, yes, give me all the Duane Reads, the bodegas and all, all the fun tidbits, you know, the soul cycles, like, you know, soul cycle in other places, but still it's just, it's, you know, the New York stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome. So you're writing so much a lot of retellings in some ways, or reimagining rom-com movies and stuff. Do you have like a trope that you enjoy reading or writing?
You know, reading, so many. Actually, someone in my reader group recently asked this, and I finally came clean, and I don't think I do this very often because it's such an kind of embarrassing admission, but I really love amnesia tropes, and they're just not done very often, and I don't know if they've just gone out of style, or like maybe like, because this is probably back in the 90s early 2000s, mm-hmm. when I was reading them, and I don't know if science has maybe just evolved a little bit more since then too, and like we know that amnesia is actually very rare, and like we know more about it, but I loved, again, like I'm big on those tropes that have the built-in conflict, and the idea that someone would wake up and not know who they are, and the things that you can build a story around, like I love those, and I can never find them, and I'm not brave enough to write one, but that's kind of like my dirty little secret in terms of tropes. Yeah. And then writing, I would say, you know, I do really like writing friends to lovers, and that used to be very much my favorite trope to read as well, the idea of best friends falling in love. The one thing I always am kind of careful with there is that those are a little bit hard to be unique from book to book, because they're sometimes it feels like there is only so much you can do with that particular plot line. Like they've known each other forever and now somehow they need to find out they're in love. So I like to write those every so often, but I make sure too that I don't overdo them so readers don't get sick of it.
I love this. So I do have some recommendations for amnesia plots. So
yes, bring it on.
Witherspoon's Cowboys of California, book one is amnesia plot / I think Cinderella retelling.
Oh my gosh.
And that came out I think last year, so you should be able to find it. You like historical, so Vanessa Riley's A Girl, a Person. It's the newest one. She has like a baby, a toddler or something like that. So this one's a toddler. I think Girl and Toddler has an amnesia plot and historical regency.
I'm totally writing these down. You're making my day right now.
Yes, I am like also trash for amnesia plots. So anytime I find one, I'm like, oh my gosh, I must have this book now.
I'm going to let you know, the second I finally get like brave enough or I get a strong enough idea about an amnesia plot, I'm going to let you know and you can be my beta reader, because yes. I know that I'm due. Like, it's just like, it's got to be happening for me one of these years. Yeah. I need the muse to speak to me.
Yes. I feel like it's just like, I don't care about the science. I'm like, whatever.
You know? Right? You know, that's not why we read romance. Like, it always kills me sometimes if I'm looking, you know, for a book to read and I read a review that's like, oh, it's, you know, unrealistic, and they give it like one or two stars because it would never happen in real life. Like, I can't buy it fast enough. I'm like, bring on like the fantasy and the ridiculous plots. Like, that's what I'm looking for.
I read for an escape. So I think for me, when I read like one star reviews, they're like, either there's too much of this, too much of that, I'm like, that's probably a book that I would love.
Yeah.
Like, same. Like, I'm like, that just count me in. I'm like, author, you found a new audience here. So I think it's like, you know, I look for unrealistic expectations. I feel like they're realistic. They're just giving you like, you know, healthy relationships or teaching you tools that you may not have in your real life, but you're like, you know what, you can actually adapt them to your life. So
yeah, there's always going to be something in there that we can take out of it. Like you said, the science doesn't have to be exact, and like, and even if like your timeline's a little bit wonky, I'm like, sure, doesn't bother me at all.
No, but yes, amnesia is like, it's goal. I feel like we just need more of those. So
yeah.
So let's see, have you read any books that you recommend? Any, I think last year you recommended some great books, so maybe this year, like, any new books that you have been on your desk that you're like, oh, this is a great book too that you should pick up?
Well, I'm still I don't think I will ever move away from my historical obsessions. Yes. So I have read, and this is actually, these are old, but I'm just going to throw it anyway, because it got me through sort of like the worst of quarantine. Mm-hmm. I reread Mary, I don't know how to say her last name. I think it's Mary Balog.
Oh, yeah. Mary Balog. Yeah.
Oh gosh. I just love her. And I've always loved her. And my favorite one of hers is The Last in the Bedouin Saga, Slightly Dangerous. Ooh. I believe the one with the blue cover. Anyway, so that's like always been like, I think it's in my top five romance of all time. It may even be my top. I've read it 100 times, but I realized I'd never actually read, he's the oldest brother. The Duke is the hero in that one, and he's the oldest brother, and he has all these siblings that play a fairly substantial role in the book, and I'd never actually read their stories. So I went back and I read the entire thing, and I think I binge read it in like less than a week, and they're 6 books and they're really long, but those were fun. And those are two, they're sexy, but she's very unique. She writes sex scenes, but she also has this kind of a slow burn somehow. It's like magic. I love her. And then also Evie Dunmore. Mm-hmm. This one, I always feel bad when I recommend books that aren't out yet. It won't be out until September, but her latest one is Portrait of a Scotsman. Mm-hmm. And it was outstanding. And I'm always excited for her books, and she's, in full disclosure, she's a friend, but this one I even told her, I'm like, oh, like, I don't as much like the kind of like the bad boys and rough around the edges heroes. Mm-hmm. I really like the uptight proper dukes. Yeah. And so I wasn't sure if I was gonna love this one, but she nailed it, everything about it, the chemistry, the hero, the heroine, the setting, you know, sort of the subplot. Can't recommend that one highly enough. What else? I recently read, not recently, it depends what you call recently, Shipped by Angie. Okay. Yes. That one I was actually asked to quote for. And I was, you know, I was happy to do it, but it was also like at a really like busy time. And I was telling myself like, okay, you know, I'm going to have to read just like a chapter a day to make sure I can get it to them in time. And I just dropped everything and I read the entire thing in a day. Mm-hmm. So that one was good. I will say, I know this is a mostly romance blog, I've been doing a lot of nonfiction. Mm-hmm. Just because that's sort of my other passion, and Braiding Sweetgrass, and gosh, it's actually Bill Gates' latest one. It's How to Avoid Climate Change. I've been big into the planet lately, I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
So anything sort of in that area, that's been mostly my to be. That's my red pile. It's nonfiction and historical.
I love this. I think, well, Historica is getting a resurgence thanks to Bridgerton. So, which is, I'm really excited for all these, like, new audiences. Like, I did not realize there's some books here. So I'm like, yes, there is. So you can see the scripts. So it's been fun to look for other hidden gems. Like, actually, that's one of my tasks this year is to look for authors that are often overlooked, but then, like, they have series that are whole historicals and you can dive into them.
So, yes. I probably recommended it last time, I'm guessing, because I love her, but Vivian Lorette is one, and she's made USA Today, so she's definitely, like, out there in the world, but she's one I don't see people talking about her books as much as I want them to talk about her books, because I think she is just outstanding, like, mind-blowingly good.
Yeah, I read her Tarzan Reimagined, because who think Tarzan in Regency, or I don't even know, Victorian era, whatever era it is, but I'm like... Yeah. Carson, like, oh my gosh, this book, it's, again, it's a makeover. He gets a makeover, you know. Yeah. So, yes, I love this. Oh. So, Lauren, where can we find you?
So, I am always on my website. I'm not really doing the social media thing right now, in all honesty. But yeah, follow me. You can follow me on BookBub. Follow me on Amazon. My website. Where I have a pretty clear, easy link to find for newsletter, which is the easiest way to get release day notifications. And I've actually recently launched a reader group. So it's not through Facebook, but it is a reader group where I put sort of my regular updates and, like, we have discussions about the books and I do behind the scenes. And, like, that's where I do all my, like, Q&A for questions like book recommendations and writing process. So definitely go to my website and check out it's just called the Lauren Lane Reader Group. If you guys are interested.
Oh my gosh, I'm joining that reader group today. So thank you, Lauren. Yay! Thank you, Lauren, for being on the show.
Yes, thank you again for having me. I was just looking at the clock. I'm like, oh my gosh, how did that much time pass already? Always a pleasure to chat with you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support the podcast. For book recommendations, author interview archives, and other fun book resources and tips, please visit whatyourenextblog.com. The Watch Your Next podcast is part of the Frolic Network. To discover new shows to listen and love, please visit frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? Watch Renix podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit watchrenixblog.com/sponsorships. To learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.